After Tiananmen, China moved on. Under Deng Xiaoping, China's unwritten informal social contract stipulated that if you stay away from politics, we, the party, will make you rich. It's a deal many Chinese accepted without protest.
We shouldn't underestimate the amount of political control inside China. But at the same time, it's also important to recognize that over the past 40 years, the government has done a good job in raising living standards. That takes the
Ian Johnson is a journalist with a long history of reporting on China.
And if you think that tomorrow is going to be a better day, that you've just bought a house, that your kid's going to be able to go to college, that you're going to be able to go abroad to travel, all of these things that have never been possible before for the vast majority of Chinese people, then you'll hold your nose or say, well, the party isn't doing such a bad job on balance, and you'll go with the flow.
By the mid-1990s, China's economy was growing at an historic pace.
Supporting China's entry into the WTO represents the most significant opportunity that we have had.
You know, especially after China's entry into the World Trade Organization, you know, China's economy just got another tremendous boost and more opportunities for individuals. And back then,
Lingling Wei, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, grew up the daughter of loyal Maoist parents. Her maternal grandfather was part of Mao's inner circle. She remembers how under Deng, China became more open to Western culture.
We knew that China's relationship with the United States was getting better.
Colonel Sanders' Kentucky Fried Chicken has just arrived in Beijing.
We were exposed to American pop culture. When I was growing up, one of my favorite shows was this American TV series called Growing Pains. I just loved it, you know, watching how kids could just talk back to their parents.
I was just being friendly. What is it with you people?
I grew up with a lot of admiration for the United States. I really wanted to go there. I was very curious about the U.S. You know, not just me, a lot of my classmates, a lot of my friends, you know, the entire reform generation, you know, had that kind of mindset toward the United States.
China was most open to Western influence in the coastal provinces, where Deng Xiaoping lured foreign companies to invest, offering them tax incentives, flexible labor contracts, and cheap real estate. One of the fastest-growing provinces was Fujian, where, by 2000, Xi Jinping had become a provincial governor. He had earned a reputation for rooting out party corruption. Beijing took notice, and in 2007, Xi got his big break. A corruption scandal in Shanghai led the old guard of the Communist Party to search for a new Shanghai Party chief. Shanghai was the biggest and wealthiest city in China. Xi was brought in to address the fallout from a party secretary's theft of pension funds.
The move to Shanghai was a huge promotion because the party chief of Shanghai is always inducted in the 25 members of China's apex of power. He was picked because of his long experiences in coastal provinces, which were the most open, most developed.
In Shanghai, Xi distinguished himself by eschewing lavish party perks, such as a private chef, special doctors, luxury cars, and palatial housing. And after just 7 months, he was brought to Beijing, where he was catapulted onto the Standing Committee of the Politburo. Suddenly, Xi Jinping became one of China's 9 top leaders. He was on his way. At just 54, party leaders saw Xi as pliable and cooperative. They didn't expect a strongman. In one of his first assignments as a committee member, Xi was appointed to head the Central Party School in Beijing, a post once held by Chairman Mao. It's where top party officials are trained, and for Xi, it was an early indicator of the leader he aspired to be.
2008年的7月份,
Tai Sha taught at the Central Party School at the time. But few people in the West were paying much attention. And inside China, the country was preparing to celebrate its newfound riches. That year, China was hosting the 2008 Summer Olympics. The person heading up the preparation committee for the Games was Xi Jinping.
中国中央政治局常委、国家副主席习近平今天上午在北京市实地考察奥运会服务保障工作时指出，北京奥运交通网络和奥运村硬件设施具有国际先进水平。
Xi Jinping actually was named the coordinator for the Olympics. Now he had very little central government experience, and that was fairly tough because he had to coordinate the Ministry of Public Security, Ministry of Defense.
北京奥运会期间，解放军将动用陆军、海军和空军的部分兵力参加奥运安保工作。
The Olympics, it was a means to test him in his probational period.
To see if he was material for the top job.
Exactly. The Beijing Olympics was China's coming out party, and everything has to be perfect.
多年的期待，7年的筹备，第29届夏季奥林匹克运动会。
No expense would be spared. At over $40 billion, the Games were among the most expensive in history.
2008 was a spectacular Olympic Summer Game. It was great.
Professor Chen Jianli is a neurologist at Peking University. We interviewed him while he was a visiting scholar at Stanford.
You were in the stadium?
Yes, I would say that was a high point. There was a true sense of joy. But it was not a nationalist joy. It went beyond that, honestly. It was, I think, more like what can only be described by Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. It was that good.
Xi Jinping had passed the test. Better yet, he was inheriting a country at its peak.
The Olympics were a major propaganda coup for the Chinese Communist Party to say, look, we've arrived. We're a world power right now. I remember...
Between 1998 and 2005, Matthew Pottinger worked as a reporter in China for Reuters and the Wall Street Journal. He also served on the National Security Council during the first Trump administration. Pottinger sees the 2008 Games as a key moment when the U.S.-China relationship shifted.
They coincided with the global financial crisis, the first spark of which was lit in the United States.
Stunning news on Wall Street tonight. At one point, the market fell as if down a well.
The debt crisis and economic chaos could have a dangerous ripple effect.
So those two things juxtaposed together created an incredible sense of jubilation in this idea that China was slingshotting ahead of the United States.
Chinese leaders realized, wow, your system used to be one we were trying to emulate. at least economically. But now, you know, you're no longer our teachers. There's this feeling that we are equal to the United States now.
About that time, China had passed Germany, passed UK, and then passed Japan. And of course, every year, it goes up and up and up to be the second largest economy.
This is an extraordinary period for America's economy. We've seen triple-digit swings in the stock market. Major financial institutions have teetered on the edge of collapse, and some have failed.
The collapse of Lehman Brothers triggered turmoil in markets around the globe.
The economic crisis made it look to people like Xi Jinping that history was moving on, the U.S. was in decline, China was on the rise. They could do just like the great powers had always done. It was our way or the highway. And that was a very important moment that changed the relationship between China and the rest of the world, particularly the United States.
The day had finally arrived. It was time to elect a president, the leader of the world's most populous nation. But there was no discernible tension, no suspense. The election of the Chinese president had been decided months in advance.
By 2012, Xi Jinping had been able to impress upon the party's elite that he was the man to lead China into the future. He was elected General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, and a few months later, he became president. Xi tried to outwardly cultivate an image as a man of the people. His nickname, Papa Xi.
When he came into office, he portrayed himself as a normal person. He launched a charm of fans. You know, he went to a steampunk restaurant and he said he's not going to have traffic control for his car, like for his motorcade.
Initially, this charm offensive worked. Many thought Xi would be a moderate.
The wishful thinking that existed, I think, was something that Westerners delude themselves with about all Chinese leaders. Is this the next Gorbachev?
继续解放思想, 坚持改革开放.
Xi Jinping is no reformer, but nobody saw the repressive, dictatorial, control freak, insecure leader that he has become. None of us saw that.
A few months after coming to power, a secret memo surfaced called Document Number 9.
Document Number 9 is an important internal party document in which Xi talks about different forms of subversion that might be taking place in China. It points to civil society groups or NGOs and says these are dangerous subversive elements in China.
It's stipulating a whole list of ideological restrictions, including the so-called universal values, which is a code word for Western constitutional rule and rule of law.
The document is explicit, instructing party members to forswear Western ideals like constitutional democracy, human rights, freedom of the press, and civil society. Party members should stay true to the revolution. Soon after, a 71-year-old journalist, Gao Yu, was arrested and sentenced to 7 years in prison after allegedly leaking the document. Xi was just getting started.
The news, four top officials removed for taking bribes, was announced on state TV.
Xi had famously fought corruption in Shanghai. And now, as top leader, he launched a nationwide anti-corruption campaign.
From top bureaucrats to low-level clerks. China, their nickname, tigers and flies.
Corruption was a real problem, but the scope and scale of Xi's campaign took many by surprise.
Xi Jinping began to purge. And people at the time, including Chinese officials, said, well, look, this is going to be a six-month thing. He's got to consolidate power.
More than 80,000 Communist Party members have been investigated so far.
That was 12 years ago. The purges are not only continuing, but they've deepened in many respects. They're now encompassing not only Xi's enemies, but he's actually also purging many of his loyalists.
Xi Jinping has just sacked his foreign minister, just sacked his defense minister. He sacked a whole lot of other people at the top of the military establishment.
The former security czar has not been seen in public for more than a year.
Those were handpicked people by him, people that he had appointed. The historian Stephen Kotkin said Hitler used to kill his enemies and Stalin killed his friends. She is purging both his friends and his enemies. And that is the mode by which he governs.
As Xi tightened his grip, he watched for other threats. Today in China, there are some 600 million surveillance cameras, one for every two citizens, able to track people's movements down to the minute.
Every street corner, there's facial recognition, there's digital recognition, there's the social credit system.
The social credit system is what?
So the social credit system is the sort of highest aspiration of the Chinese Communist Party, to have everything every human being does go into a computer system. And with AI and all sorts of other sophisticated programming, you can know exactly where a person is because he'll have bought something with a credit card or a digital payment system. His car will have gone down a highway. Every kilometer, there's a camera taking pictures of your license plate. They will know everything about everybody real time. So this creates a kind of a techno-autocratic system that's unprecedented and with which we've had no experience. It makes George Orwell, look like something from the Stone Age.
There is also a designated Ministry of Public Security tasked with monitoring the internet.
Xi Jinping came to power and created this agency to control the internet. We all like, ha ha ha, how can you control the internet? Internet is so messy, so vast.
Good luck.
Yes. And then he did. He controlled the internet.
It's part of the Great Firewall, a combination of legislation and technology used to regulate and block huge swaths of the internet. In China, there is no Google or YouTube or Facebook. When a meme comparing Xi to Winnie the Pooh went viral on Chinese social media, Xi Jinping was not amused. Censors banned any such comparisons. When Tai Sha published an op-ed calling for the protection of individual rights, she was purged from the party. She says she was already being monitored 24 hours a day.
It could be in millions, tens of millions, or hundreds of millions who have negative thoughts about Xi or the system. But it's very hard for them to mobilize, to act together. Any direct, more confrontational, organized political movement will be zapped. The fear is like almost like a subliminal air that you breathe in.